The following is the Tri-City Amateur Radio Club TipsNet for Wednesday, the 16th of December.
I'll take that as my cue. This is Kilo 1 Delta Charlie Tango calling the Tri-City TipsNet. Good evening and welcome to the Tri-City Amateur Radio Club TipsNet. This is Kilo 1 Delta Charlie Tango. My name is Dave. I'm located in the town of Preston. I will be in net control this evening. Membership in the Tri-City Amateur Radio Club is not necessary for participation. All properly licensed radio amateurs are welcome to check into the net. Those that do not wish to check in are certainly wishing to, stand by and listen. This net operates on the 147.060 megahertz repeater with a PL tone of 156.7 hertz. If needed, the secondary is a repeater that we no longer use. The net is held each Wednesday evening starting at 7 p.m. local with various net controllers on a rotating basis. This net is intended to provide an informal operating environment for new operators as well as those experienced amateurs. The purpose of the net is to provide a venue for presenting questions and obtaining answers and advice related to amateur radio. Also to promote good fellowship among amateur radio operators and encourage the use of good operating procedures. The TipsNet is a directed open net, and that means we call for a round of check-ins. When we have everyone checked in, we'll go down to the list for comments and questions. During the check-in, please state if you have a question or comment for the net. We'll ask for your questions after everyone's been checked in. There are three sections to the TipsNet. The first is the open net with rounds of questions and comments. Second is a section for announcements of upcoming events and items of interest of amateur radio. And the third is a section for those that are seeking, swapping, or selling amateur-related items. Unless otherwise directed, all communication should be directed to the net control station. When checking in, please say, "This is," and release the mic button. Exactly like that, and listen to ensure no one else has called at the same time that you have. And slowly give your call sign phonetically, along with your name and location, and mention if you have a comment or a question for the net. This is Dave, Kilo 1 Delta Charlie Tango, your net control. We will start taking check-ins now. Please come with your call sign slowly.
Here is Kilo Charlie 1 Mike Victor X-Ray, Kevin, and Groton. Good evening.
Good evening. Here is Kilo Alpha 6 Papa Delta Golf, Kevin in Norwich with a question for the net.
Mike November, Jerry and Preston, no questions. Here is November Kilo 1 Victor, Steve in Coventry, no questions.
Juliet Whiskey, Chuck and Groton, no questions. Good evening.
Hmm.
All right, so far we have KC1MVX, K6PDG with a question, K1JMN, NK1V, and W1FJW. Are there any further check-ins before we start the question and answer process? Please call now. This is Kilo 1 Delta Charlie Tango.
This is Kilo Charlie 1, Kilo Lima Zulu, KC1 Kills, John in East Lyme, no questions.
All right, good evening. Nat also recognizes KC1 KLZ. So with that, we'll start things out of order. Although we have two Kevins at the top of the list, so. But of course, we all know which one has a question. So let's go there, and then we'll cycle down to the list and see what sort of answers, advice we can get for KA6PDG. Please come with your question.
Hey, good evening, Dave, and the TipsNet. And yes, I am typically regarded as somewhat of a questionable individual. But that aside, question for tonight. Would like to know what the thinking of the Net or those on the Net this evening is about the effect that snow, that stuff that's falling outside your window right now, the effect that snow has on radio propagation. Particularly in the amateur bands, but it could be in other bands, other frequencies as well. Now, I've posed this question to a few hams over the years, and the feedback I seem to get from most of the experienced guys is, nah, not really. Snow doesn't really affect radio propagation. But I still have my doubts. It seems like it should. We all know that snow is made of water that's crystallized. and it seems like there ought to be some effect. What it is, I haven't been able to identify. I can't say I've noticed a specific difference. Although I noticed tonight, turning the 40-meter, less than 40 and 75 meters just before the Net, just kind of tuning around and noticing that not hearing much on the bands, but that may be an anomaly with my antenna. Not sure. Everything's tuning fine. So does snow, the precipitation form that we are becoming very conversant with tonight, does it affect radio propagation, whether it's voice or digital or even amateur television, which I guess would be digital, or any comments regarding that might be helpful to a curious mind like mine, and perhaps yours, KA6PDG, back to Net.
All right, yes, inquiring minds want to know. Thanks, Kevin. This is K1DCT in the Tri-City Amateur Radio Club TipsNet. So let's get on to the list and see what folks have to say, what their experiences may be with snow and trying to get some signals across the globe. So we'll start at the top of the list with KC1MVX. Any thoughts, comments on Kevin Six's question? This is K1DCT in the TipsNet.
Thank you. This is KC1MVX. And, yeah, well, happy little coincidence. I've been watching a lot of KE0OG's videos lately. He's a ham on YouTube and just does a lot of instructional videos. You If you've ever YouTubed anything amateur radio, he's probably shown up in your recommendations. I was looking through them today because I was learning about how to determine if your shack and antenna grounding, how it compares to your home's electrical grounding when you don't have a way to directly tie in your electrical grounding for your house, such as my situation. But I've been watching a lot of his videos, and he did recently talk about snow, given that he lives, I believe, in Colorado, and it is the winter time. Let me reset. And I'd have to go back and watch the video, but he goes pretty in-depth, and I believe that there is such an effect of radio wave scatter and absorption in the snow when it varies, wet snow versus flaky snow. But I believe his conclusion, or the conclusion from the study that he referenced, was that it generally only occurs in the microwave bands, and the gigahertz bands. And VHF, UHF, and HF amateur bands should be relatively unaffected because of our relatively long radio wavelengths are just able to go through the snow like it's not there, I guess. Probably should have learned more technical terms from watching his videos, but they're a bit drawn out, but they are extremely informative. That's all I remember. Hope that shines some light on it. KC1MVX, back to net.
Alright, well, thank you, Kevin. I tend to agree with what you said, and without getting too technical, I would agree. As you go up in frequency, it does seem to have an attenuating effect on high frequencies. I have experienced it myself during a snowstorm because I have dish or TV. It'll wipe a signal right out. Even a heavy rainstorm will wipe the signal right out. So, but I think on the lower bands, even up into 440, if you notice anything, there's so many variables in propagation that to pinpoint one thing might be a little iffy. So let's go out and see what Jerry thinks about the subject and what his experiences may have been. K1JMN, this is K1DCT in the TipsNet.
K1DCT, K1JMN. Yes, can you repeat the question, please? I got distracted here.
Okay, yes, Kevin Six was asking about the effect of snow on radio propagation.
Oh, okay. I would imagine, now, please understand where I'm coming from. I know nothing. So, I would imagine that there might be some detriment to the signal getting through, but I wouldn't know exactly how much of a detriment that would be. So I expect some, but not a whole lot. That's all I can say for now. K1JMN, back to net.
Okay, Jerry, I wouldn't say you know nothing. You just, a little newer to the hobby. And I know, even though I've been floundering around this hobby for a long time, I certainly don't know it all. But, like I said, there'll be some attenuation as of much higher frequencies. At least that's been my experience and what I can recall of things I have learned along the way. So let's see what Steve has to say about the subject. NK1V, please come with your comments. K1DCT in the TIPSnet. That you're working against would be greatly enhanced with the snow, and probably change the radiation pattern a little bit. So, there's probably some advantage to fall in snow rather than falling. But let's go down and tap into the. The scientific side of things rather than opinion, and we'll find out what Chuck has to add to the conversation. W1FJW with the Tri-City Amateur Radio Club TIPSnet. This is Net Control, K1DCT.
I've noticed that snow reflects radar waves. Therefore, snow must scatter signals at least above a certain frequency. My microwave oven heats food mostly by shaking water molecules, which means there's some absorption there. Here again, in the microwave, it's optimized to exactly the right frequency, whereas 40 meters is a long ways off. And we know that during a very heavy rain, like during a hurricane, we'll get very poor propagation on 2 meters when a heavy squall comes through. The signal really gets eaten up. Now, snow is a lot fluffier than rain. It varies a lot, but it's about 10, 12 to 1. You know, an inch of rain would make a foot of snow. So I'm assuming the effect of snow would be a good deal less than rain. In terms of providing a nice ground plane over the earth and making a bit of a reflective cover, if you will, to shield the signal from the ground resistance, which would dissipate some of it. So I assume, you know, if you had a clear night over snow-covered ground, you'd probably have better propagation. But those are just guesses. Back to net, W1FJW.
All right, Chuck. Well, thanks. I'd say they're pretty good guesses. I think, when you get to a certain frequency, there's going to be some effect. You know, it's going to be, inversely proportional. Is that the right, as the frequency goes up? No, I'm sorry. It's going to be directly proportional. As the frequency goes up, so will the attenuation. So, let's stop in and see what John has to say. KC1KLZ, K1DCT in the TIPSnet.
This is KC1KLZ, John and East Lyme. Just listening in, learning a little bit every day. And that's about it. Back to net.
All right, John. Well, good to hear you. I haven't heard you check in a while. So, I think that's pretty much what we all do, is just learn a little bit every day until your brain is full. So let's see if Kevin 6, his brain is full now with our thoughts and on this question of his. So KS6PDG, any follow-up you'd like to toss in here? This is K1DCT in the TIPSnet.
Well, good comments. Thank you. I appreciate it. And thank you, Dave. Especially what Steve and I guess Chuck commented on and yourself. I was really thinking, and I didn't make this clear, I was really thinking about the snow that lay on the ground, as the song says. Not so much the stuff as it's falling, but I didn't make that clear. And interesting, those were some interesting observations. I do remember working at a radio station where a lot of our programming was taken off a satellite, and we had a satellite dish on the roof. And every time there was a meaningful snowfall or a relatively big storm, and that dish got covered up with snow, we had to send one of the younger, sprier members of the staff, or perhaps one of the college interns, up on the roof to clean off the satellite dish. But no, that was helpful, and I appreciate it. Good thoughts. KA6PDG, back to net.
All right, very good. Yes, I can remember years ago, I think it's gone now, the local cable, when there was a local cable station here in this area, they had a place up in the industrial park in Norwich, where they had a big dish, and that's where HBO and I guess all those other premium channels came in. And I can remember them having to, all of a sudden everybody lost HBO and all those other premium channels, and they had to go up and shovel out their dish. So I think that's all been changed now. I haven't even looked for it. But all right, very good. We'll stop at this point and see if there are any further check-ins, people that are clamoring to get in to the TipsNet. Please come with your call sign phonetically and slowly. This is Kilo 1 Delta, Charlie Tango, net control. You're going to get, as you like to say, instant service. I don't know how long you've been listening, but Kevin 6 brought up a question about snowfall and the effect on propagation. So if you'd like to comment on that, or if you have another subject that you'd like to break open, please come now.
Thank you, Dave. My apologies for being late this evening. I half fell asleep in the chair downstairs watching the gentle snowfall. And all of a sudden, I woke with a start, realized what time I was and dashed up here. Effects of snow on propagation. Well, I do know if you get too much snow, it'll take down your antenna, and that'll definitely affect propagation. Other than that, nope. I listened for just a few minutes, but I don't really have much to comment about that. And not really anything else off the top of my head that I wanted to bring to the net. As I said, I was just off in la-la land, so I wasn't thinking in advance. So thank you for letting me chime in. Back to net control, KC1TWR.
All right, Tim, no worries. You know, and you're never late. You just... you got here when you got here, so. And I was sitting in the recliner having a cup of coffee after supper about, I don't know, about 20 after 6, and I said, oh yeah, the TipsNet's on tonight. And then I looked at the calendar and I says, oh, I'm running the TipsNet tonight. I guess I better, you know, shuffle around and make sure I got a backup question or two, because, you know, that would be the time when nobody has any questions and I didn't come prepared. So, you know, you look like a substitute teacher on the first time you walk into a classroom. So speaking of other things I brought, I was going to talk about antennas, nothing technical per se, but just about longevity of antennas and survival rate of UV rays, all that kind of stuff, you know, water seeping in, just those kinds of things that happen to antennas over time. So I guess we'll keep the order that we had. So we stuck Tim in at the bottom. Kevin already had his say, so Kevin 6 had his say already. So we'll cycle through top of the list, and KC1MVX. Any comments on anything I've mentioned or anything else you'd like to bring up? K1DCT in the TipsNet.
KC1MVX. I guess I did misunderstand Kevin's question, which makes sense now in hindsight that he's talking about snow on the ground, because, well, we're talking right now with snow in the air, so that answer is sort of self-explanatory. My thought would be, and this is just going off deductive reasoning, is that snow on the ground is white, and the reason it's white is because it reflects all wavelengths of visible light. If it were black, it'd be absorbing them all. If it reflects all wavelengths of visible light, and visible light is significantly longer wavelengths than VHF, UHF, I would imagine that it would also reflect the wavelengths in the amateur radio bands, and that it would, presumably, a white surface, especially with a crystalline structure like that, would reflect radio wavelengths more than a dark surface like the normal grass. I may be completely off here, but that's my logic, and I'm sticking to it. KC1AVX, back to net.
Okay. No, I agree. I think, although I think you'd see, you flip something there, at least in my mind. It's gone now. My mind is. I think you do get a better ground plane with a, nice fresh snowfall. And as Steve mentioned, particularly with a vertical type antenna where you're really relying on that ground plane, you may not notice as much difference with a dipole, but that's how that goes. So I just brought up antennas in general because very few people know this. There is actually a section in the National Electrical Code, that's the code that they use to wire your house and business and industrial plant, but there's actually a section in there for transmitting antennas, and that applies to hands, and it tells you the smaller size wire you should use and all that kind of stuff. I don't think any insurance company would ever come out to your house and try and quote that to you, but it's in there. So just something to think about when you're making antennas. A lot of times people think, oh, I'll use the smallest gauge wire I can pull up in a tree. But of course, when you do that, it's also got a strength factor to it. So just talking antennas, babbling. We'll babble about antennas. So with that, we'll go back to Kevin 6, and we'll go down to the list. K6 PDG, K1 DCT in the tip set.
All right, interesting thoughts. Dave, I think what you picked up on was what I noticed, too, in Kevin X's statement. And actually, I think I'm right in saying that the frequency of light is actually higher than radio frequency. And the way I double-checked myself on that was to think of an expression that you hear many hams use. They'll say, well, I have enough antennas, I have an antenna farm, and I can transmit anywhere from DC to light. DC being at the low end and light being at the high end. So I think you did have that flipped over, Kevin X, but Dave can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's how it works. And on the gauge of wire, that was an interesting thought there, Dave, and one thing that I've learned, I learned this with my Part 15 AM experimenting and reading and researching, but I've also sort of confirmed this with other hams. If the wire you're using is thicker, like say 12 or 10 gauge, as opposed to, and I have heard of hams using like 16 or 18 gauge wire, for whatever reason, or because that's what they had laying around, or they wanted it to be invisible or something, your queue is actually going to be wider. Is that the right way to put it? So if you're using a thicker wire, the bandwidth that antenna is going to tune on is going to be slightly wider. That's what came to my mind. Those are the only comments I have, so I'm going to sit back and listen and learn, K6PDG.
All right, this is K1DCT in the TIPSnet, and yes, Kevin, you picked up on what I was going to mention to Kevin X, and it just slipped away. So yes, visible light and stuff is much higher frequency, shorter wavelengths. So anyway, yes, the bigger the, you know, and same with like beams and stuff. If you use a skinny little wire versus a piece of aluminum tube, you do get a better bandwidth. So just little fun facts. With that, just tossing about antennas. So K1JMN, come in with any comments you have, K1DCT. Okay, I wonder if Jerry's out shoveling off his antenna. I'll give him another shot here. K1JMN, this is K1DCT in the TIPSnet. All right, we'll circle back. Maybe he's got interrupted. Let's see what Steve has to say. He's a... an experimenter of antennas, and K1V, K1DCT in the TIPSnet.
And K1V, yeah, it's just a general topic of, as all of my constant woes, I think it's just under 4 years I've been ham, and I don't think I've had an antenna up long enough for two reasons. One, because I'm constantly experimenting and thinking I can make not necessarily something better, but something different. And I'm taking them up and down and trying different things. And Mother Nature helps me with that often, because I sometimes do things that are somewhat risky, you know, somewhat not risky danger-wise, but risky as in, you know, into trees and all kinds of stuff, and they'll come down, and of course my tower woes and all that. But one of the things I think about is, even as I'm assembling, is like, how long should I leave this connection up on the towers? I have my current tower, there's probably 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 antennas up there of the various kinds. Some I can lower with pulleys, others the tower has to be lowered. And do I just wait until I have an issue? And I do kind of monitor, you know, readings and stuff, what the wire's doing, and, you know, check them with the, you know, gauge and beams and stuff on occasion. And or do I just set a schedule and maybe just wait till next time I want to change something and take it down? And every time I do lower the tower, I do disassemble all the connections and inspect them. But I don't do it just because there's no time or energy to do that. Let me reset. I suppose if I had plenty of time every time I assembled something, which I often don't, you know, I'm sneaking in on a weekend or trying to, before the sun goes down, and sometimes I don't exactly, I'm not 100% comfortable with the connection I've made and weather tightness, you know, maybe I didn't have something up the hill that I needed, or maybe I, you know, so I put it together the best I can and go, and so don't like to let things go too long without inspecting them. And I've had stuff up for not too long and found boo-boos where I made a mistake and water or something got in there. There was an issue. And weird little bug problems that I never thought of. I don't know if any of you guys have ever had any of that. drones and stuff getting into stuff way up on a 40-foot tower and just blocking everything up. And on gauge, yes, I have noticed a difference, and I do believe there is a difference in tunable bandwidth as you go heavier in gauge, because I've made some simple dipoles even with 10 or 8 gauge wire, and they've been a little bit much more forgiving than ones made with 16 gauge wire. But you're giving, I'm giving up a lot when I do that, and one of the things is weight and portability and the ability to get that thing up into a tree and stuff. You gain some strength, but I generally now take the smaller bandwidth over the, you know, ability to get, you know, just to have less weight up in the trees and stuff, and especially on portable. I usually run pretty much everything 16 gauge on portable. So it's interesting topics. Back to that, NK1B.
Very good, Steve. Yeah, you bring up a lot of interesting stuff. It's like how long, you know, I put an antenna up 10 years ago, and I've never touched it, and it's working okay. So do I change the coax? Do I wait till it fails? Which we all know will be at the absolute worst possible time. Like you said, you know, water creeps in, little bugs, you know, didn't take much, and UV rays, they break down the insulation, so, you know, all sorts of factors to consider. So I guess you just gotta, pick your own, whether you want to wait till it fails, or, you know, every time, you know, every 10 years, change things out, have a schedule. Hams aren't very good about that, but, let's see what Chuck has to add to the general antenna conversation. W1FJW, this is K1DCT in the Tipsnet.
Well, in terms of the size of the conductor, if you look at one element of a dipole, it's essentially three things in series. You have the inductance of the wire, you have the radiation resistance, and you have the capacitance, both to ground into the other element of the dipole. Now, let's say we pull in a second conductor. Instead of having a single wire, we pull in two identical wires close enough together so that they share current. Now you got the radiation resistance really doesn't change, because half the current goes in one wire, half the current goes in the other. They both have the same resistance, so it pretty much ends up being a wash, maybe a little lower. But the inductance, now you've got two inductors essentially in parallel, which would give you half the inductance, and you have two capacitors in parallel, which essentially gives you twice the capacitance. Now, an antenna is resonant when the inductive reactance equals the capacitive reactance. So when you get twice the capacitance and half the inductance, or the other way around, you haven't changed the resonant frequency of the antenna, but when you get away from the resonant frequency, what you're seeing is you see the impedance go up, because the inductive and capacitive reactances no longer match, and you have some net inductance or some net capacitance that's not subtracted away. Well, when the values are lower than they were with a single wire, you get broader bandwidth, and that's why the big diameter tubing works so well electrically. Back to net, W1FJW.
All right, Chuck. Well, I thank you very much for that nice explanation of the why. I think that was very good, and hopefully everybody latched on to that. So now you know. You heard it here first. Let's see what John has picked up in his hanging around and just trying to learn stuff. KC1 KLZ, K1 DCT.
This is KC1 KLZ, John in Eastline. Yeah, I learn a lot. I pick up bits and pieces and eventually put it together. It actually means something. And that's about it. All I can say is thank you all very much for having me. And I got to go out tonight and wish you all a good, safe evening. And we'll see you now. KC1 KLZ out. Back to net.
All right, John. Well, good to hear you, and you're welcome anytime. Chuck in. Like I said, it's been a little while. And, yes, just picking up the pieces. You know, it's just, it's like building a jigsaw puzzle. You know, every day you just get a few pieces in there, figure out a little part of it, and hopefully someday you get the whole picture. But it takes a while. So let's see what Tim has to add at this point about antennas or anything else he'd like to bring up. KC1 TWR, this is K1 DCT in a tip set.
KC1 TWR, definitely learning a lot this evening, and finding it all very fascinating indeed. The only other question that I would ask is, and this is for people who've been doing this for quite a while, HF that is, how often do you, or do you, every so often, disconnect the antenna wire at your station, hook up an antenna analyzer, and do a good readout on it to see how the antenna is actually faring? Or do you just use the meters on your tuner and equipment in order to keep an eye on the SWR and what have you? Just curious about that. I can see it going both ways, but that's the only question I'd have, and back to net control. This is KC1 TWR.
All right, no, perfectly good question. I can say myself, I pretty much watch the SWR meter on the HF tuner, which all my antennas go through, because it's got a switch built into it for switching antennas. So, and some goes, you can go through either direct or use through the tuner. So I keep an eye on that and just, glance over and make sure everything's okay. And in fact, a couple of weeks ago, I was in a contest, and I had RF get back into my headset, microphone, earphone, headset, and found a couple of connections that weren't as good as they should have been. So, problem's been cleared, and that's that. Ready to go through the entire list at this point. Looking at the time, I know we like to keep this somewhere around an hour. Does anyone have any comments they'd like to mention about what Tim just brought up? SWR connections, do you check your antennas or you wait till they fail? Please call now. K1 DCT in the tip set.
W1FJW.
All right, come on in, Chuck, and give us your thoughts.
Well, I don't have an antenna analyzer, but I have a manual antenna
a tuner and I log the readings, the settings for the various popular frequencies that I use, and if it changes a whole lot, then I know something busted and I go fix it if I can find it. Back to net, W1FJW. Yeah, I do something similar. I have a little, actually, the back of one of my QSL cards, and I made a whole chart for every band, and like 80, you know, you got 80 and 75 phone, there's a big difference there, so I've got a couple of settings, and yeah, when it seems out of whack, it's okay, something's going on. In fact, I had that experience with my inverted V, which is fed with 450 ohm line. All of a sudden my readings were way off where they should have been, and come to find out my 450 ohm line had actually opened up on one side, out there slapping around a breeze. So that's how that goes. At this point I'm going to call for are there any additional check-ins for the first section of the TIPSnet? Please call now. This is Kilo 1 Delta Charlie Tango.
This is Kilo Bravo 1 Romeo Alpha Yankee Mark Ain Groton. No questions, but I do have a comment.
All right, Mark. Well, good to hear you this evening, and you can come right in with your comment now.
KB1RAY. I've been listening most of the net as I cooked and ate my dinner here. I actually have two comments, I guess. My only real experiences with radio in snow, one of them would be the fact that if it's snowing, it's cold out, which means my heating system is on, which produces a whole bunch of noise on HF. I still haven't tracked that down or how to resolve it. So HF gets a little bit difficult to use. And the other thing that I've noticed is that, well, if it's cold outside, there might be more people listening. So maybe the signal's not going further or whatever due to the snow, but there might be more people listening and able to respond to you due to the snow. With that, hope everyone has a very safe and good night. KB1RAY, back to net control.
K1JMN.
K1JMN, re-recognized. You have any comments, Jerry? Let me just say thank you to Mark. Glad you popped in. I'd be curious to know what sort of heating system you have. I'm guessing it's electric heat, but let's see what Jerry has to say. K1JMN, this is K1DCT in the TIPSnet.
K1DCT, K1JMN. My apologies, everyone. I received a phone call from my son that could not ignore, so I had to bail off for a little while and take care of that phone call. So now I'll be standing by listening in again. So, okay, K1JMN, back to net.
All right, very good, Jerry. I figured something came up, and hey, that's what happens in life, you know. You're on the radio, and all of a sudden the phone rings, and it's that one phone call all week that you really want to answer. So let me just pop back to Mark for a second, because I'm curious.
KB1RAY, what type of heating system do you have? K1DCT in the TIPSnet.
KB1RAY, yeah, it's electric. It's a heat pump. It's got a unit indoors and a unit outdoors. And due to restrictions that I have, my antenna is basically kind of right above the indoor unit in the attic. So that's how that's set up. KB1RAY, back to net.
Okay, yeah, that answers, at least to me, answers a few questions. There's a couple of motors going on there, I'm sure, and they're probably variable speed drive motors, I would guess, and that's a whole bunch of noise. So, at this point, I'm going to make the last call for the first section. Any final comments before we move into the second section? This is K1DCT in the TIPSnet. Now move into the second section, which is announcement of interest for the amateur radio community. If you have one of these, please call now.
KA6PDG.
All right, well, we'll start with Kevin, KA6PDG. Please come with your announcement.
For those on the net or those listening in tonight, please be reminded of the annual Christmas Eve net. Which will take place at 8 o'clock Christmas Eve, December 24th, 8 in the evening, local time on the Norwich repeaters, 146.730 and 449.725, both with a PL tone of 156.7, or you can get in through Echolink on node 711268, or by looking up November Alpha 1 Charlie November dash R NA1CN. -R, 8 o'clock Christmas Eve. Everybody's welcome. The net provides an opportunity to just jump in and transmit a comment or a holiday reflection or thought, or just say good evening to your amateur friends on Christmas Eve. Any questions, please contact me, KA6PDG, or Chuck, NA1CN, and we'll do our best to answer any questions you have. Or we'll refer you to Dave. KA6PDG, back to net.
All right, thank you, Kevin. Yeah, we'll try and make that. You know, it's a busy schedule this year with that's right, there's no place to go and nobody to see. Yeah, we'll probably be there. Let's go see what Tim has for an announcement. KC1TWR, please come with your announcement. This is K1DCT in the TIPSnet.
Actually from Rick in 1DWM. He said to convey to everyone that the New London County WeatherNet will meet on this repeater tonight at 9 p.m., also tomorrow at 10 a.m., and at the end of the storm. So that's for the New London County WeatherNet. Back to net control, KC1TWR.
All right, very good. Yeah, I'm sure there'll be plenty of weather watching going on. So, in fact, I got to find my my snow ruler here, so, because I'm sure that'll come into play tomorrow. So we'll be, I'm not sure I'll be around for 9, but definitely be listening all day tomorrow, and unless, of course, I'm clearing snow, which I think a lot of us be doing. So, with that, if there are no additional announcements, are there any additional announcements at this time? K1DCT in the Tipsnet. All right, we'll move into the third section, cell swap or seeking amateur-related items. Is there anyone that fits into one of those categories? Please call now.
KC1MVX seeking 2 items.
All right, KC1MVX, Ev with your list.
All right, this is KC1MVX. I am looking for one or multiple, preferably multiple, old school Cisco phones. Some of you might know where I'm going with this. Voice over IP Cisco phones, typically the SP or SP Alpha models of varying models. So if you have any of those models, contact me and we'll figure out if it's the right model. So any Cisco phones that can be used for voice over internet protocol, for the ham hotline, and not directly related to radio, but I'm also looking for an oscilloscope, something simple, 2-channel, with preferably a waveform generator under 50 megahertz. I know it's a stretch, but if anybody happens to have one for a reasonable price, I would be happy to take it off your hands. KC1MVX, back to net control.
All right, is there anyone on the net tonight that can fulfill Kevin's wish list? Please call now. This is K1DCT in the Tipsnet.
K1JMN.
All right, Jerry, go ahead.
I have a Tektronix 422 scope. It's dual channel and it has a built-in square wave generator. I don't know that it's really working right now, but I don't think it'll take much to get it turned on. I haven't turned it on in a long time, so I don't know what the problem might be. I tried to turn it on, but it didn't. But I haven't destroyed it intentionally, so it might have been something that just aged. So there you go, and you can have it for free if you want to work on that. K1 Jammin', back to net.
All right, MVX, would you like to talk to JMN directly and ask any questions? Please go ahead.
All right, Jerry, that's excellent. I will definitely contact you about that. I'm assuming k1jmn9@gmail.com is still current for you. As long as it is, I will email you and set up a time to get together. Really appreciate it. KC1MVX to K1JMN request verification of email address.
That's correct. That's a good email address. It works. Have at it. K1JMN, back to net.
All right. Well, that's what I like to see, a little success. But sounds like Kevin X has a new project. So, and I, if you, Kevin X, if you get a bunch of those phones, I'd be interested in one. Kind of interested in this ham hotline, although I'm not sure I need another phone around here ringing, but at least it wouldn't be somebody wanting to extend the warranty on my vehicle. So, with that, we've, thankfully, we've made it to the third section. At this time, I'm going to make the last call. Anyone have any additional check-ins, any further crosstalk, before I, you know, turn the lights on, shut the beer tap off, and put the stools up on the bar? Please call now. This is K1DCT. Last call.
This is Whiskey 4, Romeo, Kilo, Delta.
Oh, good evening, W4RKD. Please come on in and welcome to the TipsNet.
Hey, good evening. I've been listening to you guys while I'm doing some work here in the basement. I've got something that one of your guys might be interested in. I've got an Astron SS30 switching power supply. So that is, I think it's 30 amp continuous and 35 peak, something to that effect. But it's an SS30 Astron. I'm gonna get another linear one instead of the switching. It works fine. It's brand new. Basically, I hooked it up once, and I'm gonna go back to a linear. So, if anybody's interested in that, they can go to QRZ and grab my email address off of there. It's Whiskey4RomeoKiloDelta W4RKD. I'm in Westerly.
Thanks, Rick. Anyone have any questions about this or for RKD before we move on? Please call now. This is K1 Delta Charlie Tango in the TipsNet. Well, very good. Hope you can find a new home for that power supply, Rick. So, with that, we put out the last call. So I guess it's time to shut the tap off, put the bar stools up on the table, and turn the lights on, and sweep the floor. So I want to thank all those that participated in the net this evening, and to all those that stood by. Tri-City Amateur Radio Club sponsors this net, has a meeting on the second Tuesday of each month, presently on this repeater at 7 p.m. on the second Tuesday. And all properly licensed amateurs may check in, and of course, anyone may listen to the meeting. I want to thank John W1AN for the use of the repeater, and K1IKE for the W1DX EchoLink connection. This net will meet again next Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. on this frequency. I now return the repeater to regular amateur use. This is Kilo 1 Delta Charlie Tango. Good evening and 7-3.